Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano, Walker Wildman, your hosts, and we welcome back, as is typical, on Monday through Thursday for Today's Issues. Steve Jordahl takes the last segment. He's a reporter and news anchor for American Family News. Good morning, Steve, / good afternoon for those of us for those listening in the Eastern time zone.
Good morning and good afternoon.
No?
Good to be with you.
Well, thank you for that. All right, what else? We had Fred in here for an hour.
Yeah, and I understand you guys were talking a little bit about the Middle East. There's some turn of events going on there, and I wanted to – this is an interesting story. So, as you know, President Trump has put his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and a partner of Jared's named Mr. Greenblatt, Jason Greenblatt, and they are the two men in charge of kind of crafting Middle East peace policy with Israel and everything. Well, they went over there, and about 5 months ago, Jared Kushner had an idea, and I think it was a brilliant idea. It is a brilliant idea. Instead of just getting the two leaders of the Palestinians and the Israelis at a table and hammering things out, he slowly and quietly started working to bring a little economic relief to the Gaza Strip. Now, the Gaza Strip is right on the southwest coast. It's a little strip of land that comes up out of Egypt, and it's heavily populated, and it's very, very poor. And it's run by Hamas, the terrorist group. Well, Jared Kushner and Jason Greenblatt thought, if we can bring some economic prosperity to these people, it's going to be a little easier for them to start making peace with Israel. So he started the effort of he's seeing if he can bring businesses into the Gaza Strip and start establishing an economy that is more than just making war on Israel and bring some food and some much needed prosperity.
Because it's right on the Mediterranean.
It is.
If you could get some economic, you know, some industries, some production going there,
right,
you'd have access to shipping lanes. And
well, unfortunately, Hamas is not really cooperating much. So it's being reported that he's kind of threatening to abandon this Plan B, which is this economic revival of Gaza. And what he said specifically was that no foreign investors are willing to pour money into Gaza during what is a Hamas-driven conflict. And they are, as quote, Hamas has driven Gaza into a state of depression. Provocations will not be rewarded with aid. So while it's a great idea what he was thinking of doing, at this point, unless Hamas, which many people have said has an interest in keeping their people poor and angry, unless they can change that. And Israel sends a lot of aid that way through. We don't hear much about that because it's not popular narrative in the press. But it's a problem with Hamas being in the leadership there.
Yeah. Well, it's a terrorist organization. I feel badly for the people living there because they have no hope. And this is not going to end well for the ordinary people who live in the Gaza Strip because Hamas is intent on seeing Israel destroyed. They will never allow anything to happen, especially if it's driven by Westerners, you know, like, you know, the U.S. in conjunction with, you know, the Israeli government. They'll never let any success come to the Gaza Strip if it's, you know, driven by Western politics. And so what's going to happen to the people who live there? They're going to always be poor. They're going to always be oppressed. They're being oppressed by their own leaders who refuse to take any steps that'll improve their lot in life. What's going to happen?
Right.
These people are going to suffer for decade upon decade upon decade. I mean, who's going to invest money in a business for the people of the Gaza Strip if you're going to have maybe employees kidnapped or if you're going to have, you know, constant attempts to fire rockets, hundreds and hundreds and, you know, up into the thousands into Israel and retaliation, and you're going to have your businesses destroyed by incoming missiles? I mean, it's just no one's going to invest there.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of when the the Obama State Department spokesperson said that, I think she's a Fox News commentator now, Marie Harf, but she said that, you know, all ISIS needs is jobs. You know, if we could get ISIS jobs, then we might be able to fix some things. And this isn't quite as an outlandish claim as that. But the idea that, I mean, look in world history. When has money stopped bad people from doing bad things, for the most part, except, you know, drug lords and stuff? But money, economic, you know, success and all that is not the problem in Gaza. It's the result of terrorist organizations running Gaza. But you can pump money into there or whatever, and they're going to turn that money into using it to fight against Israel.
Or build tunnels, you know, I mean, all this kind of thing that has come to the light of
day. The only thing that I think, and this is not written in this article, but from what I've been reading, is the alignment of the Arab nations are not the way they were in the last decades. Egypt has a lot more friendly relationship with the West and, in fact, with Israel. So does Jordan. And I don't know where Lebanon is right now, but those are all countries. Syria is in a civil war, so they're not in a position really to cause Israel a whole lot of harm until they get their whole thing settled. So the other Arab nations could put pressure on the Palestinians, on Hamas, to maybe lighten up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they will. And I agree with everything you guys have said, but that's just the – if I have to play the optimist, that's what I
will. This might have been one of those things where everybody says, this will work, and Jared Kushner and others said, all right, well, we'll just give it a shot and prove to you that it won't work. And so it didn't mm-hmm. come out that way.
By the way, Lebanon, I think, is increasingly under the control of Hezbollah.
Okay.
And so they're eternal enemies with Israel as well.
But it seems as though Saudi Arabia and Egypt and some of these others it seems like they sat around at a table and said, you know, being at constant conflict and war of words with the U.S. and Israel is not going to get us anywhere economically, so we might as well learn how to get along with these countries.
Well, especially with Iran. We talked about that in the previous segment. Iran casting its shadow over the Middle East. They're trying to be the hegemon in the Middle East. You have Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, that all also saw when ISIS arose a real existential threat mm-hmm. to their own governments, having these kinds of groups begin to bubble up in the Middle East, and then Iran. And so they're going, well, you know, we may not love Israel, but Israel and the U.S. are good allies to have when it comes to ISIS mm-hmm. and Iran. And maybe that's been driving some of that.
Do you remember the first, I think it was the first foreign trip, not including Canada, that President Trump took after he was elected? And it was to the Middle East. And he addressed a gathering of Arab nations in, I think it was in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And he told them at that time, he said, listen, it's time for you guys to step up and take care of this terrorist threat in your midst.
Yeah.
You know,
strong,
take
it was
the ball.
Strong language.
It was very strong language, and it was
on
very
their
much
soil.
It was very much appreciated by them, and I think that probably was the table which you spoke about a second ago, that they might have sat around saying, maybe this is an opportunity to, you know, not always be at war with the West.
Yeah. All right, what else we got?
Well, let's go back to politics for a second.
Sure, why not?
It's good to know that someone is on top of things, and our favorite Democrat, Maxine Waters, knows exactly what happened between Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin when they had their one-on-one meeting. And
she's the gift that keeps on giving.
She is. Nobody knew what they talked about, but Maxine is going to let us know. This was over the weekend on MSNBC, what she had to say.
This president cannot borrow money in the United States from any bank. This president is looking at Russia for his new money, financial playground. He and all of his allies that I have told you are the Kremlin clan. The centerpiece of this is lifting the sanctions. I think that's the agreement that Putin had with this president in order to help him get elected. Putin is saying to him, when is it going to happen? So he has a private meeting with him. We know what they talked about. I think I know what they talked about. They talked about lifting the sanctions. They talked about the upcoming elections. They talked about all of the things that they could not talk about in an email or on the phone. He had to go and meet with him in private.
I think the exact phrase that Trump might have used is, I'll have more flexibility. Wait a minute. That wasn't Trump, was it?
That was President Obama.
That was Obama. I'm sorry. I got confused there.
That was, before the 2012
elections, yeah. Right.
When President Obama, then President Obama, was caught on an open mic with Dmitry Medvedev talking about, hey, tell Vladimir that once I'm reelected, I'll have more flexibility. We can work something out.
Yeah, so, and you know, she would have a little more credibility, and so would the rest of the Democrats, if Russia had been the common foe amongst Democrats for a decade. But this new idea that Russia's the baddest actor in the world is only like 2 years in the making.
2 years. What happened 2 years ago?
Well, President Trump came on the stage, okay. Then candidate Trump. But even y'all remember Mitt Romney and President Obama back in 12, it was, and President Obama mocked Mitt Romney because Mitt Romney said Russia's a threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he mocked him and said, you know, they're not a threat. And
I think he said, by the way, Mitt, the 80s called and they want their foreign policy back. He was making fun of the days of the Cold War.
Exactly. And then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton does the plastic reset button that ends up being a joke. And so all of this, and then President Obama says, you know, wait till after the midterm or after the election, I'll have more flexibility. So Russia has not been an enemy until President Trump came on the stage.
Yeah. I'm just glad that Maxine's on top of things, you know, because.
Yeah.
That's amazing. She knows, of all people, she knows what they talked about.
We know what they talked about.
Right.
Democrats are having a little bit of a little civil war, maybe not such a little civil war. They are being stretched because of the Bernie Sanders, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the new candidate that came out of New York City, that are socialists, left socialists. Democrats are trying to figure out what to do with that on the one hand. And on the other hand, the centrist Democrats, the people that are not socialists but are maybe more just traditional liberal Democrats, they're people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. They're all old people. And so they're trying to figure out where the new blood is.
They're older.
Okay.
Let's not make slurs against the elderly here. I are one.
For a politician.
I can get a discount anywhere in town because I'm 55 or older.
So. Well, these are older people that haven't quite come to their senses. What is it they say, that if you're young and not liberal, then you have no heart. If you're old and not a conservative, you have no wisdom.
Yeah, no brain.
No brain. So, but these are liberals that keep on going. So people like Nancy Pelosi. So Democrat Congressman from Maryland, Seth Moulton, was talking to Massachusetts. I'm sorry. He was talking to CNN on the weekend, and he was talking about what they have to do. Listen to this.
What we need is a new generation of leadership to be honest about the problems that we face. A lot of Americans are hurting. A lot of Americans are working two or three jobs just to make ends meet. And we need a leader who's going to talk about the future, not bring us back to the past, but talk about the future. Be honest about the fact that a lot of Americans are losing jobs, not to immigrants, but to automation. Be willing to be strong on national security, to create a country that's strong and safe, and someone who's willing to reform government, someone who has a vision for the future. We need a uniter in our party. We can continue to have these narrow and divisive politics with our current leaders, or we can find leaders who are going to really bring us together.
It's interesting when you listen to what he says the party needs to do. Jobs, national security, mm-hmm. government reform. Those are all things that President Trump is doing.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting. There's several angles of problem that the Democrats have. The main part of the nation isn't going to go along with the Sanders, Ocasio-Cortez, socialist, left-leaning thing.
Right.
The Democrats themselves are a little tired of the gaffes coming out of the leadership of Nancy Pelosi, and they would like her not to step aside. You got Hillary Clinton, who continues to relitigate the 2016 elections. And the people that are young and ready to take the leadership are starting to talk a lot like President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I heard Joe Lieberman, former senator from Connecticut, former vice presidential candidate. I heard him on Fox. He was talking about this same thing. He was saying that, now, he's older, But you have this older generation of Democratic leaders have old ideas, you know, for a lot of young people, have old ideas, old approaches. Lieberman was also talking about this democratic socialism push. And he said, listen, if the Democratic Party becomes socialist, he said it's not going to end well because outside of, you know, boroughs like Ocasio-Cortez won in the Bronx, nationally you're not going to win if you run as a socialist. I mean, not yet. I mean,
California
thankfully,
maybe in New York. Yeah,
certain parts of certain states. So this is a really bad time for the Democratic Party because they do need new leaders, but a lot of their leaders are this far left version of the Democratic Party. And the old guard, not necessarily the older leaders, but even, Democrats who are middle-aged, but establishment Democrats, they're going, we cannot push this party off a left socialist cliff and expect to govern. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong. I think the American people would appreciate a political party or a political candidate who said, like Trump, we need to try to get jobs back here, to get companies to bring their cash back. They're not going to make money off the pocketbooks of Americans by moving their industries, their companies overseas, and then selling their products to us, putting Americans out of business. We need to build a wall. I want to hear those kind of things from Donald Trump. I have no problem with what this congressman from Massachusetts was saying. Is also saying, we have Americans who are losing jobs to automation. I mean, two things can be true at the same time.
Right.
And I think the first political party to say, hey, listen, we do want to work together where we can with the opposition party, so we're going to do what Donald Trump says because he's in the White House. But we have no problem, Democrats, with saying, all right, what's your approach to helping Americans who are losing their jobs due to automation? Mm-hmm. Well, what's wrong with that?
It would be a novel approach for our politicians in Washington to actually talk issues instead of personal attacks.
Right.
It would be unheard. It's been unheard of in the last couple of
years.
Yeah,
I think one of the reasons is the Democrats don't really have a message. And then likely if they came up with a message, then we could critique it and it might not make sense. So the best thing to do is name call and talk about how bad President Trump is. But as far as that might work in D.C. and with the media, but with your average person in America, they may not like President Trump, but they're tired of hearing all the negative. At some point, people want to hear, so what are you going to do about it?
Right.
What would you do different?
And it's hard because a lot of what President Trump is doing is working.
Right.
All right, what you got?
We have warned people about Netflix and this series called 13 Reasons Why, which now has a second reason out. If you get a back issue of the AFA Journal, you can read more about that. But I have a new disappointment from Netflix that parents might want to know about. Netflix has adapted the early 20th century novel Anne of Green Gables, a great kids' book, right? The remake is called Anne with an E, but the writers of this have seen fit to update it into it's still set in the 1900s. Early 1900s, but they've thrown about 5 to 6 to 7 gay characters in the script,
right,
which weren't there to begin with. And so more indoctrination, more disappointment from Netflix.
They are on a really bad run here
with
some of the stuff. Don't they also have a series coming or a movie coming out on Netflix? I think it's Netflix originates with Netflix, where a 12-year-old child is the reincarnation of Jesus.
Yes,
I think I heard that. They had just recent accusations of some pedophilia in some of the stuff that they were doing.
Yeah, that was a disgusting opening scene in a movie. That's I'm not even going to give the name of the movie because it's Netflix is starting to stumble a little bit. They have had some great success in terms of inside the Netflix company productions, Stranger Things, and some of the stuff.
Yeah, some of them are very
huge,
good. Some they've always had some
popular
problem programs, but they're a world secular.
They've seemed in the last year to become overly provocative.
Yeah.
Yes.
With their questionable content unnecessarily.
Well, There's other, I mean, Netflix, I think, was one of the first outside vendors, outside of the regular film studios, the online type people, to do original programming. So they kind of had the field to themselves for a year or two, but HBO now has a whole bunch of programming.
Well, HBO and Showtime were earlier with that, but Netflix surpassed them all because right. they became kind of a clearinghouse. You could watch whatever you wanted. It was on kind of on demand. You pay your subscription fee. Whereas HBO and Showtime, they would produce, you know, programming, but you had to watch it when they aired it, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so the model of Netflix has been hugely popular because more and more people are moving towards, I want to watch what I want to watch when I want to watch it. And that has gotten them the hundreds of millions of dollars that they needed to do their own programming. Yep. So,
indeed. I'd like to end the program with something from a new file. This is from the Chick-fil-A file.
Oh, man.
You want to know
can
how
curly fries really be heavenly? Waffle fries, excuse me.
You want to know how to get Chick-fil-A for life?
I would like to know that. Yes, please.
You can't. You have to have a baby in their restroom. Apparently.
Oh, man. Well, that can't happen at any time.
Falcon Griffin was the woman's name, and she was on her way with her husband to the hospital. And
all right, now hang on a second. Her name is Falcon Griffin?
Fallon. F-A-L-O-N.
Okay, because I was going to say Falcon Griffin is one of the coolest names ever.
It is pretty cool. Huh?
All right.
And this was in San Antonio, Texas, and they were on their way to the hospital. She was having contractions. They stopped at the fast food restaurant just for probably some sweet tea to get on the way. And
she was actually dropping her other two kids off.
Dropping her kids off?
They went to the hospital with some friends.
Oh, with some friends, okay. Yeah.
But they might have gotten some sweet tea.
Yeah, I'm not just dropping them off just on the curb. Y'all
hey,
stay here. We'll be back.
You want to watch my kids while I go have a baby?
Play in the little
play area.
She was meeting some friends with the kids.
But her contractions got bad, and the baby started coming, and they didn't have time to get to the hospital.
Wow.
So she went into the Chick-fil-A bathroom. She gave birth, and the store has given this child lifetime food from Chick-fil-A.
Just the child.
Well,
you know, one of the reasons I think they did this is because they got so much press from this that they're like, they can have chicken sandwiches all they want.
That's right. And the little girl's name is Gracelyn, and she will have a job when she turns 14 at Chick-fil-A as well.
Gracelyn Griffin. I'm liking these names.
Yeah.
That's cool. Gracelyn Griffin.
So
I'm gonna use that at some point.
So we got to give props to Chick-fil-A.
This is going to be a little bit of a sad commentary on human nature, but the suspicious part of me says that now women who are on their way to the hospital are going to try to have their baby in the bathroom so they can get at least one kid.
You guys,
free Chick-fil-A for life. You think that's possible?
You guys are both married. Would your wives ever decide that that would be a good idea?
No, you're right.
No.
You're right.
I can't imagine.
I'm not going to comment past this.
Smart man.
Boy, you just throw me under the bus. No, I think you're right. Any husband that says, hey, sweetie, I got an idea.
How much do you like Chick-fil-A?
But if your husband keeps circling the same block around Chick-fil-A while you're going into labor,
here's what you can do. Every time Chick-fil-A opens a new store, people line up, and the first 100 people in the store get Chick-fil-A for a year.
Yeah.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Okay.
So people camp out there when they open it. But that's been their MO.
All right, folks. With that, we leave you for today's edition of Today's Issues. More great programming directly ahead on the American Family Radio Network. Lord willing, we will see you tomorrow. Hey, go have a Chick-fil-A sandwich.